Welcome to the Jerusalem Post podcast. I'm Yaakov Katz and joined as always by Tamar Uriel Be'eri. And Tamar, how is your new year?
Well, you know, it's new.
It's new. Has it gotten off to a good start? New year, new government, new Israel.
It's definitely different. You know, with the new year came literally a whole new Israel. But you know, I think it's at least good to see that there was a peaceful transfer of powers.
Which is not something you can take for granted. We're recording this on January 5th. Tomorrow, January 6th, is, as we all know, the two-year anniversary to the attempt by a group of people to try to prevent the peaceful transfer of power in the United States. And here, you know, what struck me was there were a few images, right? But one was, even at the Public Security Ministry, which is now called the National Security Ministry, and yes, the minister is Itamar Ben-Gvir, the outgoing minister, Omer Bar-Lev,
yes,
from Labor, they did a ceremony to transfer the ministry from one person to the next.
Now, Omer Bar-Lev was like very heavily criticized, also internally at the time from the coalition, just from a bunch of different standpoints,
right,
in terms of his approach to Israel's internal security affairs. And Ben-Gvir is...
But he's the complete polar opposite of Omer Bar-Lev.
He's complete
And they
opposite.
Still sat together, did a ceremony at the transportation ministry, which was now taken over by Miri Regev,
yes,
from the Likud, and yes, left office was Meirav Micha'eli from Labor. Again, two polar opposites. I think I even saw a picture of the two of them.
There's several photos, yeah,
embracing one another.
There's also in the communications ministry. It's several,
right,
ministries, yeah.
So, you know, these are people who you can't accuse of being friends or being political allies, but they still understand that there's something greater than themselves, I think.
Yeah, that this is nevertheless the democratic process. There was a social media post a few years back by Bezalel Smotrich when I believe it was a Labor MK announced her retirement.
Mm-hmm.
And he uploaded a selfie with her saying, "We literally agree on nothing, but you've been a great friend along the way." And mm-hmm, so it's important to remember that there's people underneath the politics and that, you know, they're going to be like hurling terrible words at one another.
And they do.
And they do. And they will continue to. But
at the end of the day, they recognize the greater good, which is the state of Israel and us, the people. And we need
humanity, basic humanity.
Right, we need a peaceful transition, peaceful transfer. Whether his name is Uri, Omri, or Omer Bar-Lev, they all know how to get it done together.
I'm surprised we managed to stay so positive at the beginning of this episode.
I'm trying. New year.
Yeah. New year, new me.
New me. New positive me.
Yeah. What's your New Year's resolution, Yaakov?
To be positive.
That's a good move.
There you go. But with the positivity, we have to speak a bit about some of the craziness that happens in this country. And one example, an illustration, came on Tuesday morning when,
yes,
the same Itamar Ben-Gvir went up to the Temple Mount. Now, let me just preface that by saying, I, Yaakov Katz, am a believer in the fact that Jews should have the right to visit the Temple Mount. I think Jews should have the right to pray on the Temple Mount. I think that it's crazy that in the Jewish state of Israel, there is a place called the Temple Mount that we allege to have sovereignty and control over. But on the other hand, we really don't. It's like wink, wink. And Jews have limitations on their visits and on their prayers and what exactly they can do and where they can go and how they can do it. There's not religious freedom on the Temple. Muslims can go there. Christians can go there. It's just Jews who have these restrictions. And Itamar Ben-Gvir, yes, he's a minister. Yes, he has been a rabble-rouser in the past and a bit of a troublemaker, no question about it, a very controversial politician. But a minister should be able to go up to the Temple Mount. And so I think that it was important that he went. I think it's good that it passed quietly, but it has opened up a storm.
First of all, I don't know if I'd say it passed quietly. If you're saying passed quietly in terms of security, even so, there was an exchange of fire upon his arrival between Israeli security forces and Palestinian forces on location. And in terms of just support or anti,
was there that? I don't remember that. There was there
right
was
at the beginning
sort of,
as he was making the climb.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was an initial exchange of fire, and you know, obviously this received a lot of negative feedback internationally. Now I don't want to go too far into like, you know, should Jewish people be allowed on the Temple Mount? Yes or no? That's a complicated subject. I think it's a little more complicated than how it's generally speaking presented, at least here right now. And I think the important thing right now more than anything is there's a new government, it's a new year, and we got to keep our heads a little bit down, especially how the international community is looking at us. And this doesn't make us look good. And I think one thing outweighs the other.
Okay, so it doesn't make us look good at that, I get. But what, you know, at the end of the day, the question that everyone's saying is, why is he going up? He's being provocative. He's going to the Temple Mount, and that's going to rock the boat, change the status quo. All, you know, everybody's come out with their statements, from the Americans to the Emiratis to the Saudis to the Jordanians, Egyptians, and Europe, of course, and the Palestinians, of course. But the question that I wonder is, okay, status quo, I mean, him going up to the Temple Mount, how does that undermine the status quo, destabilize it? Number two is, why is everyone saying Israel shouldn't do anything that would change the status quo, but we're giving a pass to the Palestinian terrorist organizations that are threatening to attack us because someone went to visit the Temple Mount? Why is no one saying they shouldn't be threatening?
That's another issue entirely. I think that is an issue, is that there's clearly a disproportionality here in terms of, you know, Israel's actions or a specific minister's actions versus its response. It's also important to remember that one specific minister doesn't represent every single, you know, body in the government. And, you know, this isn't Israel's government storming, quote unquote. That's what I love, by the way, when they say storming the Temple Mount.
Storming the Temple Mount at 7 o'clock in the morning for a visit that lasted just 13 minutes with no media that was invited ahead of time.
So on a Jewish fast day.
On a Jewish fast day, which is why he wanted to go that day. But by the way, someone could make the whole opposite argument, right? Itamar Ben-Gvir, the guy who would run to every scene of every terrorist attack after it happened, in search of the camera, right? In search of the publicity to make trouble, did something that was totally unlike him, very different than the way he's operated in the past. Are we seeing a new Ben-Gvir? Is this a new Itamar Ben-Gvir? Is this one who's more moderate? I don't know. But you know who might know? The guy who we interview on this week's podcast.
This is true.
Yishai Fleischer, a senior advisor to Itamar Ben-Gvir. I interviewed him the other day, and we had a long talk also about the Temple Mount, also about Ben-Gvir's plans for the ministry that he's now in charge of, the police. So stay tuned for that in just a bit.
But I think it's a bit of a jump to say that, you know, Ben-Gvir has reformed. He's now But I mean, listen, it's important to remember that while the Palestinian response, the terror organization's responses specifically, are extreme and are disproportionate to what's actually happening, that doesn't entirely justify Ben-Gvir's actions, in that he knows this is the reaction that he's going to get, and the result is simply going to be this response. You know, we saw it last year when war broke out in Operation Guardian of the Walls.
Right.
You know, the entrance to the Sheikh Jarrah, the Temple Mount situation, those were different things that, while obviously disproportionate, did trigger the war and did end up losing several innocent lives, causing the loss of several innocent civilian lives. And so, am I saying throw blame at Ben-Gvir? Am I saying throw blame in one specific direction? Absolutely not. And I think that it's nevertheless very important to condemn the terror organizations, because that's what they are. They are terror organizations. But nevertheless, trying to keep things calm, I think, is a worthy sacrifice to not go up to the Temple Mount right now.
You know, there's a saying in Hebrew, right? Al tiyeh tzodek tiyeh chacham, right? Don't be right, be smart.
Exactly.
So that I also grant that you have to be smart about when, how, where, what. But can I ask you a question which I think has been troubling me? I'm curious if it's been troubling you. So look at this picture here. To our listeners, I'm showing Tamar on our computer screen a picture of Itamar Ben-Gvir on the Temple Mount. And one thing that struck me, right, was the sport jacket looks like it actually might be a tuxedo jacket. Have you noticed
this is
that?
Actually our sideshow of the Jerusalem Post's fashion commentary.
You see, I don't know what this is called here.
It's completely mismatched. He's got like this.
It's like
silk
a shiny
lapel.
Yeah, it's like a shiny lapel, which would indicate that maybe he's wearing a tuxedo jacket and not a suit jacket.
And then just like a regular old blue tie.
Right. Unless it's the camera and the angle. But I saw this picture in a bunch of places, and I looked at other photos of him. I mean, yes, people might say I'm a little bored. It could be that I'm analyzing what the jacket is of Itamar Ben-Gvir. But I do think these are important questions that we have to get answers to.
I'm trying to understand. Why are these important questions? If you could just clarify.
I mean, the fashion speaks to the person.
And it's just a mismatched outfit. Maybe, if he wore a green and a
blue
sock.
Maybe there's a strategy behind it. Maybe he's trying to throw us off. Okay, I don't know. Anyhow.
Listeners can't really see my face right now.
Clearly you're not seeing things that I'm seeing. Okay. In all seriousness, though, I do think that what's most important, that it did pass quietly from a security front.
Yes.
the diplomatic fallout is still being felt.
Definitely still being felt.
UN Security Council meeting and talking about this.
We're recording before the UN Security Council meeting.
So we don't know exactly how that's going to play out and what exactly is going to happen. But the this is something that really got the world upset. On the other hand, it might have actually normalized it, which means the next time that Ben-Gvir goes up, because there will be a next time.
Of course.
People won't say anything. So maybe it was actually not such a terrible thing what he did, and now has normalized something that actually, on a principle level, should be normal.
I mean, if the kind of goal is to normalize, like, letting Jewish people up to the Temple Mount, I don't know if this is something that you can kind of numb the Palestinian people who are very riled up by this kind of action.
Well, the world, you can. It's not numbing
them. International reactions?
You're not going to get as fierce a reaction the next time.
Time will tell.
Unless there's some big, big violent outbreak.
The U.S. wasn't happy about it.
The U.S. wasn't happy. And that's what's interesting, right? And we want to talk about that for a moment, because the U.S., which is obviously Israel's closest friend and closest ally, has been very outspoken about the visit to the Temple Mount. Ambassador Tom Nides made comments himself, was on the radio and other places, and said, look, this is something that we see as a provocation. We see this as something that can raise tension.
We see Ben-Gvir as a provocateur.
Right. And we will talk about this and we'll call this out. And we call on the Prime Minister, who has told us in numerous conversations that his hand is on the wheel, that he's in control, that he needs to remain in control.
By the way, Ben-Gvir did go to Netanyahu and to Netanyahu's office and say, like, I'm planning to go up to the Temple Mount. I believe he went Monday.
He went Monday night before Tuesday's visit. Right.
Right. And Netanyahu, the statement officially put out by the Likud is that the Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu did not actively oppose Ben-Gvir's decision to go to the Temple Mount. So perhaps this is his hand still on the wheel. Meanwhile, you know, Yair Lapid just spoke to Ben Kaspit from our sister publication, Ma'ariv, and said that this is all signs of Netanyahu's weakness.
By the way, why is it a sister publication and not a brother publication?
Excuse me, we're a feminist publication.
No, that's fine. But I mean, like, that term that exists, I'm curious. I should look this up. It comes from somewhere.
I assume that it actually comes from Hebrew, because Hebrew is a gendered language, so objects are gendered.
Yeah, maybe it's a term that comes
I've never heard it used in English other than specifically our publication. I mean, learned about it when I came here.
So, like, if because we're part of a group of media, so maybe, like, Ma'ariv is our sister publication, so Walla, which is also owned by the Jerusalem Post,
is our uncle, actually.
Are they our brother? Are they our first cousin? 103 FM radio, are they a cousin?
I think we're actually all sisters.
We're all sisters. It's only female.
This is sisterhood.
I understand.
The sisterhood of the traveling journalists.
I'm sure, to any of our listeners who might know why we're calling it a sister publication,
feel free to comment down below.
Feel free to comment, send us an email. We're happy to hear from you. I think the getting back to the important part of this is these kind of things are going to test that relationship between Israel and the United States.
Yes,
and
100%.
it's going to keep testing it. And I don't envy Tom Nides, who's the ambassador here, who cares deeply about that relationship, but it has to hold all that together.
He very much emphasizes how important you know, it is to recognize that Israel is nevertheless a friend of the U.S. He actually, on the radio interview that he did, he said that Israel and the U.S. are like real life human friends. In that
sisters or brothers?
Friends. You don't need to know what gender they are.
Okay.
You don't need to gender the countries. But they, friends can fight.
Yes.
And they can publicly argue, but they're still friends at the end of the day. And I think that was kind of like a special thing to say. But also, yes, he's not in an easy position at all.
And I mean, neither is Netanyahu or Ron Dermer, his strategic affairs minister and close advisor, who's also kind of running that portfolio of Israeli-U.S. relations.
I'm definitely not jealous of Israel's envoys to the United Nations at this point.
Yeah. But you know what, Tamar? It's a new year.
Yes.
It's new beginnings.
Stay positive.
we're gonna stick with the positive today. And we're going to leave you listeners with the idea that Israel has embarked in 2023 with a new government at the helm. They're going to do stuff that not everyone's going to like. I, for one, have never been shy to share my criticism, and neither of you, or has the Jerusalem Post at large,
Support.
Right. Yeah. Or support. And I think that we have to give them a chance to govern and to hopefully lead Israel in a positive direction. And also, you know, there's something to be said about giving a government the opportunity to govern. We've been stuck for so long in round and round and round of elections and this nonstop cycle of instability that now we have a stable government that has won a resounding victory, has a very large majority relatively. Let them do what they were elected to do.
So, you know, I think that the person who worded it pretty well was actually a U.S. Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, who said a couple of weeks back, about a week before this government was sworn in, he said, "We're going to judge the Israeli government by policies, not personalities."
Right. And we should do the same.
Yes.
So on that note, stay tuned for our interview with Yishai Fleischer, the spokesperson for the Jewish community of Hebron and a senior advisor to National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir. It's great to have a longtime friend of the Jerusalem Post and someone who I've known for a while, Yishai Fleischer, who is the spokesman for the Jewish community in Hebron, Ir HaAvot, the city of our forefathers, where the Machpelah Cave, the Cave of the Patriarchs is, an amazing site that is just connected to everything about being Jewish, and is also a senior advisor to Israel's national security minister, Itamar Ben-Gvir. And Yishai, it's great to have you with us. We're speaking just a couple days or a day and a half after Minister Ben-Gvir made his visit up to the Temple Mount. The whole world has come crashing down on Israel with criticism for this visit. And I mean, personally, we were talking just before the show. I wrote a piece the day before he went up to the Temple Mount saying that he should go up to the Temple Mount. I think this is sovereign Israel. It's Judaism's holiest site. And we can't give in to terrorism and we can't give in to terrorist threats as a sovereign state. And I'm glad to see that it went by quietly. But I'm curious from your perspective, what was he trying to achieve? What's the purpose? And why did he do it?
All right. So first thing, I want to thank you very much for having me on your show. And keep up the good work. I just need to make one tiny correction because it's just so important to me. And that is, you called the Tomb of the Patriarchs and you said it's the city of our forefathers. And I am very pedantic about saying that Hebron is the city of the forefathers and mothers.
Yes.
And that the Tomb of the Patriarchs is the Tomb of the Patriarchs and Matriarchs, not only because I want to highlight that side, but also because I think that actually the central component, the central element of the Tomb of the Patriarchs and Matriarchs is the mamas and the papas. The fact that it's a shrine for the family, not some founder of an idea, but the first family of Israel, these people that came together as a family to give birth to a nation. And that's why it's such an important thing for me to say that it's really fathers and mothers. And I've been working here on the Hebrew folks to also say Avot v'Imahot, and I've even succeeded. Well,
I appreciate the correction and it's important. Yeah. Thank you for that.
Yeah. With regarding to Minister Ben-Gvir, first thing is his relationship to the Temple Mount is well known. And he, like many others, is a Temple Mount goer. His wife is even a stronger Temple Mount proponent. And they just are. They just believe in Jewish rights in this place, in this holy place, in this holy site that is, you know, that is really its holiness derives and its importance derives from the fact that two temples stood there. And it's not just a religious site. It's also a capital of two states. We had two previous commonwealths whose capital was this Temple Mount. And so it also has a political, national, historic weight to it for the Jewish people. And so he is one of the people that is a proponent of going up. And that's very well known and very famous. By the way, he's not the only minister who's gone up. Minister Gilad Erdan tweeted, "I also went up as a minister," and he was very proud of that. And I saw other people like Michal Cutler Wunsch, former Knesset member and international lawyer, all kinds of folks piped up and said, "Yeah, I go to the Temple Mount. There's nothing wrong with that. That's part of the status quo, this holy thing called the status quo." But in any case, he went up there. And the only, I guess, thing that he was trying to achieve more than that is, A, honor the day that he went up, which was the 10th of Tevet, which is a fast day commemorating the siege of Jerusalem by the Babylonians about 2,600 years ago.
Right.
But the other thing that he did up there was the minute that Hamas issued a warning to Ben-Gvir and to our government, "Dear Balak," as we say in Arabic, you are warned, don't go up on the Temple Mount. The minute they said that, he had no choice but to go, because this government cannot be held hostage by a terror gang who's going to tell them that the Jew can walk here and not here, walk here and not here. We can't do that. We cannot be seen to be doing that. And so the minute that they issued that threat, I mean, that set the ball rolling even more than the, you know, or let's put it this way, it added to the internal yearning to go to this holy place, to see God and to be close to Jewish history, but also to show the bullies that we will not be bullied by you. And so I think he achieved that. Now, he did it with police approval, with the Shabak, the Israeli FBI's approval, and the approval of the Prime Minister of Israel. I'm only saying that because, contrary to the image that he is somehow a rabble-rouser, he went up there with full coordination with the security services. And I think that that is very meaningful in the sense that he used the system. I'm always telling people, I'm like, you don't understand Itamar Ben-Gvir. He's actually a lawyer. Like, his real internal clock is of a lawyer that understands how systems work. A good lawyer knows how the legal system works and knows how to, you know, mangle it and move it and shape it and fight for it, but still keep it within the rules of the game.
Well, he's not an outsider. That's what I want to ask you. You know, people, I think, thought that if he's going up to the sound pond, there are going to be cameras, there's going to be TV crews, there's going to be journalists. But he actually, the night before, he had met with the prime minister. It seemed that he's going to be delaying it. And there were some papers in this country, thank God it wasn't the Jerusalem Post, wasn't one of them, that said that he's postponed it, that he caved in. I think it was Yediot Ahronot that said, used the word hitkapel, like he folded, as if in a sign of weakness. But then actually he went up early in the morning, all by himself, no TVs, no journalists, no one was there. It was almost as if he was saying, you know, I'm going because I'm going for myself. It's not here to make a show of it. Was that the strategy?
You know what? I want to tell you something. I was not privy, and I asked, but I was not privy to knowing when he was going up. But I have been up with him before, and my mom, Dr. Fleischer, who is a successful chemist in her earlier life, is today amongst being a grandma and my mom, she's also a tour guide on the Temple Mount, because my mom's a big history buff. Why do I say this? Because she had seen him before in Temple Mount, and every time he goes up, it's the same. It's not for show. It's for a personal, true connection. It's not to make a declaration, and certainly not to make a battle. It's to come and have humility in this place, like King David had that humility, you know, to understand what the meaning of this place is. And that's exactly how he did it. He did it quietly. He came up in the morning. There's not a lot of pictures. He did one short 30-second video in this thing, and he basically said this place is important. And also, of course, I have to defy, this government has to defy, you know, Hamas threats. We're not going to be bullied anymore. We're in our homeland. We're not going to be bullied by the, you know, jihadis and the various haters of Israel. So that's the way it went. But here I want to add, or mm-hmm. maybe already predict your next question. Why is this such a big deal? Well, you know, Yaakov, I believe that there are two kinds of stories. There are real stories, and then there are what I call like media stories. Like, there is no story. The story is a minister went up to the Temple Mount quietly, no problems, there was no violence, no anything. That's the real story. That's the story.
Right.
Then the inflated condemnations and all the stuff, it is basically a fluff piece, a puff piece. Like, nothing really happened here. What happened was that a Jew, a minister, not for the first time, a minister has gone up, a minister of the standing standing government went up to the Temple Mount quietly. But the puff around it is the condemnations and the gets. What exactly are people condemning? That a Jew went up to pray to he didn't even say the word pray, by the way. If, you know, for the BBC was asking me all about that today. The word pray wasn't even the discussion. Although I don't think we should even I didn't even want to give respect to that question. Pray or not pray? What's your business? Who's praying and not praying? But in any case, he went up.
By the way, the idea that Jews should not be allowed to pray at their holiest site is itself insane. Right.
Or anywhere, or pray in the Dunkin' Donuts in Teaneck. I don't know what, you know what I mean. Why should this even be a question? It's such a, you know, people, what passes for a question is such an absurdity. It's like, I don't even want to. Why should I even answer you? Person wants to pray, let him pray to God. That's a basic human right, certainly for Jews in their specific holiest spot.
But
in any case, the big world like hubbub around it is. I'll tell you how I see it. Now we're going to get political for a second. I think that the global left, and what I mean by left is not like the average liberal person. I mean to say the progressive hard left of the world has seen from the Trump years how to operate when they have a candidate or a government that they don't like, which is basically the following three words: besmirch, besmirch, besmirch. And everything is blown out of proportion. Everything is turned into like a kind of circus. Nothing happened here. And now there's all these elements that don't want to see this kind of government in place. So they're just searching to besmirch, besmirch, besmirch. There's nothing to besmirch here.
So I do want to push back on that. And I wrote a piece, and you and I spoke about this before the election, where I said that I think Ben-Gvir is what the election needs to be about. And I called him a danger to Israel. And you know, lots of people were saying that. Lots of people are still saying that today. My concern at the time was, yes, this is a person who came with a past of that could be described as racist, that could be, you know, with Baruch Goldstein's photo picture on his wall, which he used to hang there, the man who carried out a massacre at the Machpelah cave. Some of his views, which he's espoused in the past, of talking of encouraging migration of Arabs and things along those lines. Now, I think the concern was legitimate at the time. I stand by my concern that was still then. I'm not walking that back. But I am very interested in what you say to those concerns, how you answer them, and also should the world be concerned about Itamar Ben-Gvir?
Okay, let me answer the second part first, which is, should the world be concerned? As far as I understand, there's a war between Russia and Ukraine in which hundreds of thousands have been killed, and it has been rumored that it could escalate into a nuclear conflict. There are inner city Chicago, inner cities of America. There are numbers that are astronomical in people being killed, like 500 a year. The top murder capital of the world is Ciudad Juarez and Ciudad Tijuana, right on the border of the United States. We're talking about 2,000 people murdered a year. We're talking about something that is just absurd. So with regard to your question, should the world be concerned? The world should stop being obsessed with Israel. The world should be concerned with its own, you know, education of children and making sure everybody's fed and trying to stop wars. There's a million other things that people need to be concerned about. There's an obsession with Israel, which is not a healthy obsession. It comes from not a healthy side of the psyche, and oftentimes is mixed with classic anti-Semitism, which has today kind of morphed into anti-Israelism. Makes sense, since Israel is the Jewish state. So with regard to the world, just calm down. It's all good. Everything's okay. The 7 million Jews will work it out with the 400 million Arabs without European help. It'll be okay. We've lived together for 1,300 years for sure. We are genetic cousins. We speak a similar language. We have a similar religion. We understand each other just fine. You know, so everything is going to be okay. Don't worry about it. And just go back home. Nothing to be seen here with regarding to the world. Wait, now, what was your first question?
No, so I was talking about the concern about his views, his militant right-wing views, his racist views, even to an extent.
Okay, so with regarding to that, I'll say it two ways. On the one hand, with regarding to the things that were more egregious, he himself, in every single interview, I myself have translated for him a few times where people ask him these questions, and he always says, he hits it right on the head and doesn't shy away. He says, I was raised in a more radical tradition. And then as I grew, and now I'm 46 years old with six kids and I'm a successful lawyer, I have understood Israel better. And I understood that my conflict is not with Arabs. It's with the jihad, with the terrorists. Mm-hmm. And in fact, and we see this in live politics, Arabs are coming to the Itamar Ben-Gvir being like, be successful. Take the weapons away from the terrorists who abuse us. Take their power away so that they don't steal our money. That because they're known to be corrupt. Give us our freedoms back that were taken away by the, you know, horrific policies of the Palestinian Authority. Push back on this. This happened to me, Yaakov, this happened to me a few days ago. Happened to be that my car was very dirty from Hanukkah vacation. I took it, you know, next to where I live in Gush Etzion, I took it to the Arabs, the car wash that they own, their business. I took it there. And I always love these opportunities to have a real face-to-face chat without cameras, without anything. And I said to the guy, who again is an Arab business owner, don't think of him as a car washer, he's an Arab business owner. He says to me, I said to him the following words. I go to him, no. That's what I said to him, no. And then I added, my ear. This is how we talk in the Middle East. I said, no, what's going to be? And he goes to me, he says to me like this, he goes, Rak Should Ben Gvir yatzliach? That's what he says to me. It should only Ben Gvir should be successful. By and I literally typed out. He had no idea that I was, you know, an assistant, an advisor to Ben Gvir. I typed out everything he said, and he says to me, just get rid of the PA. Give us our work permits without having to pay, you know, somebody off for it. Let us have our security back. Take away the terrorists that you guys brought here to rule us. Let us be residents of Israel. Get rid of Oslo. That's what he said to me. I'm telling you, I can send you, Yaakov, the WhatsApp that I wrote of his words to me. And,
okay,
and I've seen now mayors of Arab cities standing up saying, we want Ben-Gvir to succeed, et cetera, et cetera. Obviously, that's not everybody, but there is a voice that says, great, deal with the bad guys. And just one last example, and I'm done. I've met many Tel Avivians who are ostensibly on the center of Israel's political map, or maybe center left. And they have said to me, this happens to me over and over again. They have said to me, I didn't vote for Ben-Gvir, but now that he's in, good, let him clean up. Let him clean up. Let him clean up this place. For example, in Yafo, next to Tel Aviv, women, Jewish women, are afraid to walk at night for fear of harassment.
Right.
So they're saying to me, I didn't vote for Ben-Gvir. I'm not like I voted for Lapid. But you know what? Now that you guys are power, good. Clean up the
you
police.
Know,
make them stronger.
I think there was also once he's in power, and there was the Ben-Gvir law, right? So this whole controversy that came around before the government was established about the Ben-Gvir law, and there was the dairy law and all these other laws. But what was the Ben-Gvir law? The Ben-Gvir law was basically taking the police law, right? The law upon which the police operate, which I think hadn't been updated in 50, 60 years. And saying, okay, the world has changed. The police have changed. The government relation with the police needs to change. And I think had it not been Ben-Gvir to an extent, there would have been almost no criticism. It was the fact that it was Ben-Gvir that drew this criticism of the changes that were being made to the law that should give some ministerial control over the police, similar to what we have, for example, at the defense ministry. Until now, the police minister was just a ceremonial position. Yes, he or she would sign off on appointments and would review honor guards and would approve a budget here or there, but had real no effective operational control. And now Ben-Gvir does. But had it been someone on the left, let's be honest for a second, no one would have said a word. So I agree with you. And I think that, and that's where it leads me to my next question of, okay, he now is the minister. He's calling it the national security minister. He's in charge of Israel's police. There is a problem with rule of law in the south. There's a problem with rule of law in the north. You mentioned Yafo. The crime is up. Arabs are suffering from crime among themselves, right, within their own communities, Arab on Arab crime, and the murder rate is through the roof. What's he going to do to stop that, to change that?
You know, when I was a kid, I lived in New Jersey, and I used to love to go to New York City because I, even back then when I was a kid, I loved action. So the action wasn't in New Jersey; it was in New York City, and I would take the bus to Port Authority, which was on 42nd Street. And wherever I had to get to, let's say the Upper West Side or downtown, I'd have to go through, you know, the area of 42nd Street. And I remember that it was downright dangerous. One time I was being even like somebody was kind of shadowing me, walking behind me. I didn't know what to do. I actually remembered a biblical lesson. I had to act like a crazy guy in order to, and I started just like spitting, cursing, and the guy just left me alone. But my point was that I remember it being dangerous. And then I remember that Giuliani came into town and things started changing. And for the better, the place became safe and beautiful and nice. The bad guys were gone, you know, and I was just like, wow. And I remember being a kid, like 16, 17, or maybe it was later, I guess maybe, you know, around there. And I was like, you know what? That guy made me believe that political change was possible, that you can get into power and things can really change. Later, I read some of his books on his tactics about how he dealt with the police, how he bettered the police. There are ways to better the police. I am not a police expert. I'm not. It's, you know, police.
Well, some
is,
of our listeners might not know, Yishai, is you are a lawyer, right? You have a law degree
right.
from Cardozo, right? I know that
that's
because
right.
I think you were in my brother's class back in the day. So,
oh, cool.
Yes. Mayor Katz.
Yeah. Nah, I didn't know. That's cool. Yeah. That's cool. you know, but I don't know all the ins and outs. Police is not just law. It's also psychology and also, you know, how to deal with this. You know, police are, it's a whole, you know, world of how to get police straight and keep away, corruption and all kinds of stuff. Handling police is it's a whole, you know, it's a whole file. It's a whole etique. It's a whole ASIC. There's a lot of stuff to figure out how to do that, right? I'm not an expert, although I have read some books on it. And I know that a lot of Israeli ex-police officers, I was, for example, at the Dead Sea, I met a guy who recently was a police captain, and he wrote a book and he presented it to Ben-Gvir, How to Fix the Police. So there are ways to do it. For example, from New York City, I'll just give you one tiny example, which I'm pushing for, which is one thing we don't have here is beat cops. Mm-hmm. Police officers walking a beat. Police officers walking a beat means that they get to know the neighborhood. They get to know the good guys and the bad guys and the store owners and the criminal elements and the young folks, and they talk with them, and they're an influence in their lives. In Israel, the police kind of sit in their cars, they take positions, they think a little bit more like army. So one of the things that we need is actually beat police, walking the streets, getting to know people. That's just one tiny example of how the police can be bettered. For example, this police officer whose name was last name Ratzon. He said to me, "We need less stations. We need no cops at their desks. We need cops out there in the field." And he gave a whole explanation. So there are many steps that can be taken. And frankly speaking, those of us who come from the United States, especially I remember New York, know what a professional police force looks
right
and feels like.
Right.
When I was a young person in New York, I felt that a police officer was a role model, somebody to look up to. By the way, there's other issues. We're always talking about police. There's another thing, which is the fire department. And a friend of mine just wrote an article about how to better the fire department in Israel. You remember American fire departments? Beautiful, sure. Respectable, you know, fire engines clean, and the whole culture of the fire engines. We don't have that quite in Israel yet. So there's a lot to learn. There's a lot to better and to become more professional. Even I remember that I read in Giuliani that one of the things that he wanted immediately to fix was the tailoring of the police officer uniforms, just to make them look more respectable. That mm-hmm. changes the whole atmosphere. So there's many steps to take. And I can't tell you if Itamar Ben-Gvir is going to be successful. I don't know. You know, he's been a Knesset member. He's been a great lawyer. Let's see if he can indeed manage. It's a different role to manage as a minister what is considered the toughest ministry in the country. Right. Everybody agrees that the toughest ministry to like manhandle, to control is the what used to be called the Ministry of Police, what used to be called the Internal Security Ministry, and now called the National Security Ministry.
I want to, before I let you go, Yishai, I want to ask you, one of your portfolios with Minister Ben-Gvir is also running foreign relations and things along those lines. There's a lot of talk I know within the diplomatic corps. Do you meet Ben-Gvir? Do you not meet Ben-Gvir? Should you talk to Ben-Gvir? Should you not talk to Ben-Gvir? By the way, I've heard journalists, this blew my mind. I've heard Israeli journalists who said, "I'll meet everyone, but I won't meet Ben-Gvir." And I said to them, "How could you call yourself a journalist then?" Right? I mean, your job is to meet everyone and to report and to interview. You can't decide who you're going to meet with and who you're not going to meet with. Whether you have criticism or you don't, that's our job. What are you hearing from diplomats, from foreign officials? Are you getting questions? Are you getting meetings? Is there interest?
Okay, so two things I want to say about that. One thing that I've been saying to opponents is I've been saying to them, your problem isn't with Itamar Ben-Gvir or with Bezalel Smotrich from the Religious Zionist Party. Your problem is what they stand for. And what they stand for is what a lot of Israelis, maybe millions of Israelis, stand for. And so you really have a problem with the nation. You have a problem with, because a lot of people believe in the things that Itamar Ben-Gvir and Smotrich stand for. And so you have a problem with the nation. And so your lightning rod is Itamar Ben-Gvir. You want to, you want to besmirch him or cast him aside, but your problem isn't with them. There's always going to rise up another one of these voices, because this is a true representation of what the people want. And I say this all the time. Itamar Ben-Gvir is charismatic, but he's not so charismatic. It's really that he represents the people's will. Mm-hmm. I know, because I'm out there talking with people. People tell me all the time, here's what we want, and here's a guy who says he's going to do it. We're going to give him the confidence to do it until he succeeds or he fails. But it's not that he's this, like, you know, the way they're portraying it, it's like he's some kind of like mind controller, and now he's in government, but we don't want to talk to him. What you mean is you don't want to talk to the will of the people of Israel who elected this guy. That I think is a problem. But I think when I say it that way, people are like, oh, yeah, I guess that's like an aha moment. Because at the end of the day, whatever you want to say about Israel, he was elected democratically.
Right.
He was elected democratically. And that's just you just have to accept that. With regarding to foreign relationships, I hope that grows. We have had some meetings. We will have more meetings. I think also time will do its work. Yeah, it's part, which is what? Which is to show the truth. I think the truth, which is that Itamar Ben-Gvir wants security for the nation. Mm-hmm. And when I say the nation, I include in that the Arabs and the Christians and the other folks within our nation, because the word nation means, of course, the Jewish people in the Jewish state, but also people who are with us, the minorities that are part of our story, always has been from the time of the Bible. And I think that Itamar Ben-Gvir has made the case, at least to me very effectively, that we are out here trying to help Israel become a more secure country for all of its law-abiding citizens and residents. And so I think the time will do its part when people see that the sky hasn't fallen, that gays are still allowed to be gays, that Arabs aren't being, you know, kicked out, except for maybe really bad terrorists who killed families and things like that. And people will see that. People see that that Israel continues. Yes, it is a more hardline government. I think a lot of people want that. I like the term hardline. Hardline is not such a bad term. Call me a racist, I don't like that word. Call me homophobe, I don't like that term. But if you call me a hardline, I'm like, yeah, that's actually true. There's a harder line that we're trying to toe here. And that's what the people voted for. And at the end, it's his to win or fail. Now, the only other kind of factor in that is, will the media give him the time and the chance and the other forces around the media, will they give him the time and the chance to do his thing? Will they give him a chance to do his thing? Or will they use, you know, all this terminology constantly, racist, homophobe, and apartheid, and this and that? Or will they give him a chance to actually implement the laws that and the policies that will make Israel safer? I hope that that's what's going to happen. I hope that things calm down and that the obsessed people will calm down and that the American Jews don't start thinking that we're cutting them off. We're not cutting you off. You don't have to worry. Like this government, it cares very much about American Jewry, North American Jewry, including Reform, including conservative, including all the folks. This is not a party. It's not a government that's trying to detach it. P.S. By the way, there's also a prime minister. His name is Benjamin Netanyahu. Like him or not like him, he's not a guy that's trying to cut off American Jewry. He himself has great relations with the United States. And so, okay, we'll move forward and hopefully that we will succeed in taking out bad guys and helping good guys have a better and safer life in this country.
Yishai, I want to thank you for joining us at the Jerusalem Post podcast. Always enlightening, and you do a good job articulating what the thinking is on that side of the political spectrum, which I think is, as you said, you're in government, they're in government. We have to give them a chance to rule, to make decisions, and to move Israel forward and not necessarily yell and scream and hyperventilate before things have even happened. And as we saw this week with the visit to the Temple Mount, the sky didn't come crashing down, right? And Jewish sovereignty was shown and illustrated over our holiest site. So that also has its value. We'll see on the rest. We might continue disagreeing, but we'll see on the rest. I want to thank you very much, Yishai.
Thank you, Yaakov.
Thanks for joining us at the Jerusalem Post podcast. If you'd like to rate, leave a review, let us know what you think. Please let us know how the episode is doing. Let us know also what you'd like to hear next in the comments down below. If this is your first time streaming us, welcome. If not, welcome back. You can catch us at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.